clean water. Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. Each morning on the GCN network, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you listen, your eyes may be open, and you may ultimately change your mind towards some of these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news, and this morning we're going to lead with a number of stories on the corruption that has been taking place within the BBC, the British Broadcasting Network. And the purpose of this is to help you understand what is really happening behind those headlines and to expose you to the truth about the nature of leading media institutions, because it will play a major role in shaping our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage Yahweh on his terms by way of his one and only covenant and through his always dependable Torah teaching, so that with his guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with God. Here's the first of two stories. This is reported now by Reuters. A crisis gripping Britain's BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, deepened this week after it emerged that a senior producer had warned the broadcaster that it could be accused of a cover-up when it axed its own expose into alleged sexual abuse by a one-time TV star. This individual's name is Jimmy Savile. He was one of the most flamboyant, one of the most beloved BBC commentators and news stars. He was the equivalent probably of a Walter Cronkite for those in America trying to understand the prominence of this man. I mean, this man was knighted by the Queen. He was so prominent. And what the story has revealed is that the BBC became aware of Jimmy Savile's vile acts, some of them which took place on their premises, and began its own expose on them and then axed it. So the allegations that the flamboyant BBC presenter Jimmy Savile, who died last year, operated unhindered as a pedophile for years while working for the BBC has rocked the publicly funded broadcaster. Now, this is a far worse scenario than what took place at Penn State. Now, Penn State is a publicly funded institution where a man was able to perpetrate unhindered pedophilic acts for years. Well, the same thing is true now in the BBC, but the BBC is as central to Great Britain as, say, if you were to take the Washington Post and make it a public institution, and then marry the Washington Post with the four broadcast news networks, making them one, and then incorporating three or four other major city newspapers, that would be the equivalent to the BBC. Its new head, George Ernst Wilson, is now under pressure to explain why the BBC dropped an investigation by its Newsnight program into Savile last year. Mark Thompson, now of the New York Times, its chief executive, was in charge of the BBC at that time. Now, there was a big stink when the New York Times hired Mark Thompson, knowing full well that Mark Thompson was the person responsible for killing the story that would have exposed Jimmy Savile's pedophilia on the premises, aided and abetted by the BBC, and yet he was hired by the New York Times. In a program due to be aired in Britain later this week, a Newsnight producer behind the investigation, Marion Jones, said that he had warned his editor that the BBC was at risk of being accused of a cover-up if it did not run the story. And yet they axed it. I was sure that the story was going to come out one way or another. The BBC would then be accused of a cover-up, he was quoted. Now, it's one thing to commit acts of pedophilia, to have your star performer commit acts of pedophilia on your premises. It's another thing to let him continue to do so and go and do them unhindered. It's a third thing to try to cover up the story so that no one knows how despicable the leaders of your institution are. This reminds me of the Roman Catholic Church. It's one thing that priests commit countless acts of pedophilia. It's another that their supervisors, the bishops and the archbishops and the cardinals, cover up their crimes so they can continue to commit acts of pedophilia. And it's another thing altogether when their popes say, bury the truth.
All three acts are disgusting.
I don't know which one's worse.
I'd probably put the act itself as being the worst, but as far as the act itself is worse, the cover up in that, I think it makes you, I don't know how to say this, it makes you an absolutely atrocious person, a horrible person.
You know, in America, if you are an accomplice to a crime, if you do nothing more than make it possible for someone to commit a crime, for example, murder, you are charged with murder. And if you are an executive with the BBC and you allowed this man to continue over decades to molest children, which he did, countless children over decades, many on the premises on the BBC, I don't think you're any better than the guy who committed the acts of pedophilia.
No, you're not. You're not.
And if you're the head of the BBC and you find out that not only was your lead spokesperson committing acts of pedophilia for years and that staff and executives knew of it and they created the environment where you could continue to molest children unabated, and you cover up that story to expose the truth, then maybe you're as bad as the rest of them.
I guess I'd say this. With the person committing the act, the pedophile, he's doing that because he's a pervert and he has something wrong with his mind. The person that covers it up, what's his excuse? What excuse could you give yourself that you won't say something or do something? And I can't come up with one.
Yeah, here's more to this story. Adults and children, including a boy of 8, were abused by Jimmy Savile. This is from a report detailing the allegations over 50 years. Police and the NSPCC outlined differences by a late presenter at venues, including 13 hospitals and at a hospice. Some 214 crimes were recorded across 28 police force areas, including 34 of rape or penetration, all perpetrated by Jimmy Savile, who was knighted by the Queen for his great work on behalf of the BBC. The CPS apologized for missing the opportunity to prosecute Jimmy Savile in 2009 while he was still alive. The Metropolitan Police said the victims' accounts painted a compelling picture of widespread sexual abuse by a predatory sex offender. Who is the man who is leading the investigation, said that Savile had groomed the nation to accept his crimes. Savile was one of the most prolific sex offenders in the 129-year history of the NSPCC. The former BBC presenter of Top of the Pops and Jimmel Fix It, who also worked as a Radio 1 DJ and received knighthood in 1990, died at age 84 in October of 2011, a year before the allegations were broadcast in a TV documentary. And so here's a man that committed 214 sex crimes, including 34 of rape. And he was a leading presenter, a man so acclaimed in the BBC that he was knighted by the Queen. And yet the authorities did nothing to prosecute him. no matter how many allegations were made against him, and the BBC chose to deliberately cover up his crime, so that rather than abusing one child, he was able to commit 214 crimes. Revelations that Seville had sexually abused children prompted hundreds of victims to come forward, including those who said that they were attacked on the BBC's premises and a number of other institutions. The sheer scale of Seville's abuse over six decades is beyond belief, said the director of Child Protective Services. Quote, he is without doubt one of the most prolific sex offenders we have ever come across, and every number represents a victim that will never get justice now that this creep is dead. So many of these, of this testimony resounds with the same, and it just comes across with the exact same history as what the Roman Catholic Church did for years. Here, you know, large institution, Roman Catholic Church versus the BBC, both hugely large institutions, both of which claim to be a public trust, both of which claim to be telling the truth, both of which not only harbored pedophiles, but made it possible for the pedophiles to continue to abuse children. The very people who were claiming to speak the truth in both institutions were despicable. And yet those around them, rather than confronting them, rather than working on behalf of the children, sheltering children, protecting children, chose to protect the sex offender instead. The BBC has absolutely no credibility whatsoever. The 30-page document revealed a number of findings. One is that Seville offended children at 13 different hospitals, including the Great Ormond Street Hospital. A total, and he also offended children at a hospice. He preyed on the weak. A total of 14 offenses were perpetrated by Seville at schools. Seville's youngest victim was an 8-year-old boy, and the oldest was a 47-year-old woman. That he perpetrated his disgusting sexual perversion for a grand total, well, from 1955 all the way through 2009, all of which was covered up. Covering a story by the in the BBC, a story about one of its lead spokespeople, a man named Seville. He perpetrated sex crimes against women and children, mostly against children, most of which were against young boys. From 1955 through 2009, he began abusing children at the offices of the BBC between 1965 and continued to do so through 2006 while broadcasting from the BBC. His peak offenses occurred between 1966 and 1976. 450 people have made sexual abuse allegations against Seville since October of last year, of whom 73% of the total were under the age of 18, with most aged 13 to 16. He operated a pedophile ring under the auspices of the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation. It is not only astonishing that he was able to do this and that one of the BBC's leading voices would be so repulsive, such a grotesque hypocrite, and that this man would be knighted as a sir by Queen Elizabeth, and that he became one of the BBC's biggest names and most recognized television personality, but that everyone associated with his programs with the BBC turned a blind eye to his activities. Well, there's a new story that came out on the same subject. This was reported by Reuters. It says that Max Clifford, Britain's most high-profile celebrity publicist, was arrested now for alleged sex crimes on a special police unit set up in the wake of the sexual abuse scandal involving a former BBC star. This is Seville. And so what we're finding now is that just like the Roman Catholic Church, once the first victim speaks out and is given the opportunity to have their story be reviewed as credible, that there are hundreds that come out, and that we're finding that Seville wasn't the only sexual pedophile in the BBC. Now it's Max Clifford. Clifford, 69, made his name and fortune helping some of Britain's most famous people defend and shape their reputations in the country's muckraking tabloid press, and had been a long-standing media pundit on celebrity scandals and and as they were reported in the press. He is the fifth person now to be arrested since police have launched an intensive inquiry into sex crimes that were committed by the late Jimmy Savile, one of the BBC's most high-profile stars. His arrest suggests that detectives are continuing to expand the scope of their investigation. And so here is an institution, the media, that claims to present the truth, that claims to be journalists that dig to the heart of a story and inform the public. And they're comprised of people who are sexual perverts, or those who are protecting and aiding and abetting sexual perverts. Well, Max Clifford is now being interviewed by police. He is on suspicion now of committing many hundreds of sexual offenses. His arrest was part of this investigation where police are now looking into more than 200 allegations of assault. And they've now heard from over 500 victims. Police are looking into three categories of alleged offenses, all associated with the BBC and its senior staff. And that the majority of the cases still involve Seville, but there are many that are now being tied to others that are linked to him. Some of Seville's victims said that they were abused actually on the BBC's premises, and that at the height of his fame, and that the BBC is now recognizing that to avoid fallout from these revelations, that they themselves chose to cover it up.
These are the places that people, a lot of people turn to for their information and stuff like that.
Yes, and the BBC has a monopoly, other than the tabloids in the UK. And the tabloids themselves have turned to be unreliable because it has proven that they have proven that wiretaps and illegal solicitations have driven much of the stories in the tabloids. Britain's media is rotten. This is Yada. I am here to try to expand your understanding, your knowledge of those things which are either myths or the source of myths, so that you might have a better view of the world and the corruptions that are a part of it. That's why we strove to expose the foul nature of the BBC, revealing that what it says cannot be trusted. We're now going to turn the page and consider what's being done in Israel. There's a new college course that is being designed to train a new generation of Jewish prophets. And it is said this is the first time that prophets are being trained since the days of the Second Temple. Now, mind you, that's not true. God does not train prophets. And there is no prophet that was trained by man. In fact, God makes it quite clear that if a prophet is speaking based upon what he has learned from man, he is not speaking from him, and that prophet's words are deadly. You should not trust them. Well, this article reads, in biblical times, they could be found on every street corner. There is no such thing as biblical times. None. Bible is the name of a pagan sun goddess from Egypt. God does not speak of his testimony being part of a book called the Bible. And at during the times of Revelations, the number of prophets who spoke for Yahweh were few. They could not be found on every street corner. At any one time, there was one or two people that God was speaking through, and usually only one at a time. So, on occasion, they could be found on a street corner. And they were, of course, preaching God's words. And this article says, to sinners and a rumbling voice and shining eyes. Most of God's most articulate spokespeople were not articulate at all. God chose people who were not qualified by human standards. When Yirmiyahu was asked to be one of Yah's prophets, he says, no, not me. I'm not qualified. Besides that, I'm way too young. I'm not going to be credible. In fact, as a young person, he would have he would be the opposite of a rumbling low voice. When Moshe was asked to fill the role, Moshe said, no, not me. My tongue is thick. I don't speak well. I'm a stutterer. Don't choose me. And so God chose people who were flawed and dented implements. I mean, you could not find a more flawed implement than Dode, who we know as David.
What were some of his flaws, other than like some of the choices he made?
Dode's primary flaw was that he had a tendency to act badly. I mean, he was way too enamored with sex and had far too many endeavors that weren't conducive to choosing a wife, love her, and raise a family by way of your fidelity to your wife. But he was a traitor at one time of his life. He had sent a man into battle just so that he could have sex with that man's wife. He did a lot of things that would not be considered appropriate. His behavior was certainly flawed.
They didn't have rumbling voices and shining eyes?
No. In fact, you look at Moshe. Moshe killed a man, which is why he fled Egypt. You look at Abraham. Abraham at one point even laughed at God. Just right, laughed in God's face. No, these people were all flawed characters. And what God is trying to say by using flawed characters is that his testimony, his teaching, his covenant is for flawed characters. It's designed to make flawed characters look perfect in his eyes, and it's designed to resolve the issues of our flaws. It's rather than the Torah being written for the perfect and that to condemn anyone who is imperfect, the Torah was written for flawed individuals to resolve the issues that we have.
I feel that's an amazing thing. I think you get flaws through the use of free will. I believe that Yah sees that, and he understands that, and he still is willing to give us the free will. Mm-hmm. And as long as we choose to do the certain things that he wants us to do, he's happy with that.
You know, the Torah is an extraordinarily liberating document, because what the Torah does is says, I know you're flawed. I know you have and will continue to do things that are counterproductive, that are not consistent with the advice that I'm giving you. And therefore, I'm going to create a mechanism in my Torah. I'm going to enable my covenant in such a way that you are not only are you not required to be perfect, it's specifically designed to resolve your imperfections. And so God recognizes who we are, recognizes that he has given us free will, doesn't expect us to be perfect. So he's created a covenant and Torah guidance specifically to resolve those problems. And so the best way to convey that is through flawed individuals. If flawed individuals like Moshe, if flawed individuals like Dode, flawed individuals like Abraham can become beneficiaries of Yah's covenant, so can we. And so it's the antithesis of what is being presented here, that these perfect people were preaching the word to sinners in a rumbling voice with shining eyes on every street corner. That never occurred, and it's because that's not God's way of communicating. If you find somebody that is amazingly articulate and really enjoyable to listen to, chances are they're not speaking for God. If you find somebody that is flawed, that has issues in their past that are less than perfect in terms of their behavior, there is a higher likelihood that God would choose them based upon whom he has chosen over the past.
But think about that as well. Not only does he choose these people with flaws, these are people that openly know what their flaws are. They know that they're flawed, and they say this to him. He's like, hey, look, right. Hey, no, hold on. You know, you don't want me. You want that person.
Right. My exact same reaction when I was approached to write Tea with Harrison, Prophet of Doom. No. You don't want me. I'm not qualified. And if that's your initial response, then you have the qualification that God is looking for most. And what is that? You have a recognition that you yourself are not qualified, which means that you're going to have to rely on him. That's very much like the covenant, where the first thing is God wants you to walk away from human institutions because he's saying those things do not have dependable or reliable qualities, because I want you, instead of relying on the human institutions, on politics and religion, to rely on me. So what did Moshe have to do as a stutterer? To rely on God. What did Abraham have to do? Rely on Yahweh. What did Dode have to do? Rely on Yahweh.
And I mean, all that is that's phenomenal. And I think he finds those people, well, first off, he knows.
He finds them entertaining.
He
they're real.
He knows which ones will do it. So.
But you know, but part of that is, I think he finds them entertaining because they're real. God doesn't like people who blow smoke at him. You know, somebody that's out there, oh, I praise God, you know, the Tim Tebow, first I want to give credit to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. They're blowing smoke. And God doesn't like fakes. Abraham was real. When he thought it was appropriate to laugh, he laughed. When he thought it was appropriate to negotiate, he negotiated. When he thought it was appropriate to follow God's lead and to walk with him, he did.
Yeah, and the other day,
and he questioned God as well.
Everyone that all the people we talked about, they all seem to have a certain level of humility about things. But not only that, he doesn't want to have smoke blown at him because he knows who he is.
Right.
You don't have to tell him how great he is or what he is. Frankly, he doesn't even care if you find him. You know, he's willing to take the ones that do find him. So somebody like that, he doesn't want you to be anybody other than yourself. And
well, speak of not being yourself. Guess what this school is called? It's called the Cain and Abel School of Prophets. Now, mind you, if you're actually aware of the story that's presented in the Torah, neither Cain nor Abel were a prophet, were they?
No.
Neither. No, neither. And one of them turned out to be a murderer. So why would you name your school of prophets after two guys, neither of whom were prophets, and one of which was a murderer? Well, anyway, this school is located on the high mountain over the banks of a serene river. It's not located there, as I guess this mythical world of prophets would be, but it's in a southern Tel Aviv neighborhood. Now, according to Jewish tradition, now when we hear about Jewish tradition, disassociate Yom Torah from Jewish tradition. Jewish tradition speaks of the Talmud and Judaism. So according to Jewish tradition, prophecy ended among the Jewish people after the Second Temple era and will only return in a generation of redemption, which they see as the arrival of the Messiah. So let's set the record straight. The last of the prophets was probably in the range of Zechariah, Malachi. The end of the prophetic testimony, the last time we have proof that somebody spoke from Yahweh, for Yahweh, it goes back to 400 or 500 BCE. The high water mark for Yah speaking prophetically through people is about 700 BCE, and then about 1000 BCE through Dod, 1400 BCE through Moshe. But the last of those who can prove that they were a prophet speaking in Yahweh's name about events that have transpired exactly as they predicted, you're dealing with a period of about 400 to 500 BCE. And that means that the time of prophecy did not end with the destruction of the Second Temple, which was in 70 CE. Unless you want to consider Yahusha, who is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh himself, as a prophet, the last of the prophets are now long gone and 600 years distant from the time that Jewish tradition would account for them. I am Yada. This is Shattering Mess. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Mist. We're speaking of the Cain and Abel School of Prophets, which is being established going forward in Israel. The saying that is quoted in this article, prophecy given to fools, refers to those trying to communicate prophecies since the temple's destruction. So there's this myth in rabbinical Judaism that there is a correlation between the Second Temple and prophecy, and that anyone who has prophesied since that time is a fool. But Rabbi Shmuel Portman Heptarzai, founder of the School of Prophets, who says that he is affiliated with the Chabad's messianic stream, believes that the generation of redemption has already arrived and that the prophecies are permitted again. Well, by the way, he is correct. We are in the last days. It's not the era of redemption, but really the era of reconciliation. And Yahusha, the Messiah, will return quite soon, in 2033, using our pagan calendar. And so we are indeed in the days of reconciliation. Matter of fact, this is an interesting quote. Our generation has been declared by many as the first generation taking part in the experience of redemption, says this director, Harpazi, who has introduced the new curriculum at the Cain and Abel School of Prophets. He is right in that regard, and guess how he figured it out? Right. He's figured it out the same way I figured out when Yahweh is going to return.
He read the Torah?
He read the Torah. If you read the Torah, the prophets, and the Psalms, you recognize that it has been nearly 6,000 years since Adam and Chawa were kicked out of the garden. And you can look at every event over the 6,000 years as millennial markers to point to the fact that we are now just years away from 2033, which will be year 6,000 Yah, when the world as we know it will cease to exist, where Yahweh himself will return to earth, and he will establish a millennial kingdom, which is a 1,000-year celebration of the Shabbat. And after that, we'll create a brand new heaven and a brand new earth as a result with his covenant family. And so in the year 2013, we are just 20 years away now from his return. So we are at that point, and this fellow at least recognizes the timeline. He knows that 1,000 years after Adam and Chawa were expelled from the garden, that was the time of the flood. He knows 1,000 years later is when Abraham and Yahweh first met and actually established the covenant relationship. He knows that 1,000 years after that, first temple was built by Solomon and Jerusalem. He knows that 1,000 years after that, in year 4,000 Yah, that Yahusha came, that he arrived as the Messiah to fulfill the first four of the Moed Mikre, Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits, and Shavuah, which is the promise of sevens. And he knows that 1,000 years after that, in fulfillment of the Torah's prediction that poisoning of the unfaithful will be demonstrated, the waters under the temple were poisoned in 133 CE. And he knows that we're just now 20 years away from year 6,000 Yah, his return.
So are they just going to, basically at this school, teach people the Torah and Psalms and then have them go out and share these with people?
Well, this is his statement. This is his statement. He says, the school of Cain and Abel Prophecy School aims to provide the generation of young people with authorized sources to direct their spiritual experiences to the way of truth and honesty. Now, there, with authorized sources, there's only one source. Now, this guy, I'm sure he'll make the source the Mishnah and the Talmud. But there's only one authorized source to provide a young people with a spiritual understanding that comes from Yahweh in truth and honesty. And that's the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. That's it. But what he's now going to do is to try to get these people, rather than recite the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, rather than teach the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, rather than expose people to what God said in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, he instead is going to teach people how to come up with future prophecies, future predictions, not simply reciting the predictions that God has already made, which are more than sufficient for our understanding. I want to thank you for participating in this first hour of Shattering Myths. We'll turn our attention to Yahweh and his Torah when we read.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact.